Lots of members of Congress and even some in the Pentagon look at that big north parking lot and think one thing. What a payroll. The question of bloated headquarters staff seems resistant to efforts to cut it, but now the 2016 Defense Authorization Bill calls on DOD to cut 30% of its staff over the next 4 years. We get more now from Federal News Radio's Scott Massioni.
The Senate Armed Services Committee has been conducting a series of hearings over the past few months on how to reform the Defense Department. A constant theme in the hearings has been the bloated Pentagon headquarters staff and the amount of money it's wasting. While lawmakers are meeting with former defense officials in another installment of the reform hearings, the problem of Pentagon staff is rearing its head again. Former Defense Undersecretary for Policy Michelle Flournoy says DOD is plagued by an unnecessarily large staff causing poor policy, planning, performance, and spending. Here's Flournoy in the most recent hearing.
What I call the tyranny of consensus and the duplication of effort across staffs. The emphasis on consensus, finding what we can all agree on, sort of watering down solutions to the lowest common denominator, has really become quite pervasive in the Pentagon. Sometimes in OSD, but particularly in the joint staff process, as the different perspectives from the services, the COCOMs, and others are brought into discussion. I think this emphasis, this overemphasis on jointness and policy, actually undermines the department's ability to respond quickly and effectively and strategically to some of the challenges we face.
If you remember back to your high school civics class, two important concepts were highlighted in the Federalist Papers. First was the tyranny of majority, which Flournoy alludes to. The tyranny of the majority was the fear that one large group of people would dominate policy. Flournoy's tyranny of consensus is similar. In DOD, policy is currently being made by three different entities: the Joint Staff, the Combatant Commands, and the Office of the Secretary of Defense. When DOD makes a policy, it has to show a united front. But with all these different fingers in the policy pie, the consensus between the three entities ends up being diluted and weak. Which brings us to the second concept, the energy of the executive. The founders were afraid of another king that would rule as a despot over the United States, and many founders suggested a weak president, or even two presidents, to weaken executive power. Alexander Hamilton argued that power needed to be concentrated in one person as a means to project leadership and make quick decisions when needed. Flournoy says DOD is suffering from an energy problem. There are too many organizations deciding policy, and it's affecting the way the Pentagon is run.
That emphasis or overemphasis on consensus is further complicated by what I see as a lack of role clarity between OSD, Joint Staff, COCOM staffs, and sometimes the services. I saw this in my perch as Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, where frequently, even though the OSD clearly had the policy lead, there were more officers working a given policy issue in the Joint Staff and on the COCOM staffs than there were on the policy staff. So, and this is across many functional areas, whether it's intelligence, policy, logistics, a whole range of areas where there's a lot of duplication and a lot of confusion about who has what role and what responsibility. And when you look at the Joint Staff and the Office of the Chairman, it's grown to nearly 4,000 people. That's 10 times what it was when the Defense Reorganization Act was passed in 1958. I actually think the Chairman and the Secretary would be better served by a smaller and more strategic Joint Staff that was focused predominantly on the Chairman's core function, which is providing best military advice to the Secretary and to the President. Similarly, the COCOM staffs collectively have now burgeoned to over 38,000 people. I think they too are ripe for a real scrub in terms of the breadth of their functions and the level of duplication with the Joint Staff and with OSD.
Like Flournoy said, this isn't a problem isolated to the policy realm. A previous hearing on Pentagon infrastructure found that bloated headquarters in general are costing the department time and money. Here's Defense Business Board member Arnold Pinero at a previous hearing.
The defense agencies have grown in number, scope, and cost, and they're not just defense agencies. These are large business enterprises that account for over 20% of all the money that DOD spends. And you have the ballooning of the defense agencies, the OSD, the combatant commands, and many other overhead organizations. The Office of the Secretary of Defense alone, we believe, has 5,000 people. Some argue it's even higher. The Defense Department would probably argue it's lower. And there are too many layers in the bureaucracy, 28 layers
of management.
Excuse
me, you said the Office of Secretary of Defense has 5,000 people.
Mr. Chairman, all our analysis shows that if you add the number of military civilians, contractors, it's roughly between 5 and 8,000. Typically on their books at Washington Headquarters Services, they tell you it's either 2,200 or 3,000. And so if you add in the DODIG and Associated, it could be 10,000 people.
Flournoy agrees.
In total, if you add in the defense agencies, you have 240,000 people, excluding contractors, who in a cost of $113 billion. It's almost 20% of the DOD budget. And this is not just a matter of inefficiency. It's also a matter of effectiveness. You know, when you go out into the private sector, there's case after case where you document that bloated headquarters, slow decision-making, push too many decisions up the chain rather than resolving them at the lowest possible level, incentivize risk-averse behaviors, undermine organizational performance, and compromise agility. I think the same is certainly true in government.
DOD is currently spending more in constant dollars than it was during the peak of President Reagan's buildup of the military, but fighting forces are 40 to 50% smaller. Part of the problem, experts say, is the use of military for jobs that can be done by civilian personnel. The Congressional Budget Office released a report earlier this month which corroborates the assertion. The office estimates that DOD has 340,000 military members assigned to commercial or support jobs. Converting just 80,000 of those into civilian positions would trim DOD's personnel costs by $3 to $6 billion. While there are problems with the system in general, there are also ways to improve the leadership, the analysts say. Former Undersecretary of Intelligence Michael Vickers, who also testified with Flournoy, says the military all too frequently prepares for the wrong war and prioritizes capabilities for imaginary wars over real ones. Vickers suggests changing the way leaders are selected.
Revamp the selection and promotion of our general and flag officers to give greater weight to strategic education and development in the course of their career. We are packing too much in the careers of every officer, and today it's hard for me to see how we will produce in the future four-star commanders who have PhDs like General Petraeus and Jim Stavridis, or have significant foreign expertise as General Abizaid and some others. The system just simply doesn't allow that anymore. With our one-size-fits-all line officer personnel management system, we have sacrificed the strategic education of our officer for tactical and joint gains, which are very, very necessary, but not sufficient. It is far less likely going forward, as I said, that we will produce officers who've attained a PhD or proficient in foreign languages and knowledgeable about areas of strategic interest to the United States. We are paradoxically plagued by both too much and too little joint experience in our officer corps. For some promising officers, we should consider relaxing the joint duty assignment until they reach the general officer or flag officer rank. And within our services, we should seek to produce a mix of highly tactical proficient and then somewhat less tactically proficient, but still tactically proficient, but strategically educated officers that are on the command track and compete to our highest levels of military office.
The Senate Armed Services Committee is holding these hearings to collect suggestions for additions to next year's Defense Authorization Act. It's possible we may see some of these additions when the bill is unveiled. From Washington, Scott Massioni, FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to FederalNewsRadio.com/FederalDrive and click Share with Friends.